Okay, here we go. I had the bright idea of doing it from here. I probably shouldn't have. I just thought it would be cool to be with here with Lynn and Ron, since they're both a part of Gentle Healing, right? You have to be on my computer. But it was a lot more trouble than I thought it was. I probably should have just gone home. oh my goodness, I see two of me. That's freaky.
You're muted again? No, I should be good.
Oh,
no, just on this one.
Yeah, I should be good. Yeah, oh, that's weird. Okay. So, so welcome to Gentle Healing. yeah, we muted the other computer, so that's why we're not getting any feedback here. Hi, Jay. Jay looks like he's locked up. Oh, there he is. There's a hand. There's a hand. All right, so I did collect some stuff, as I always do. The funny thing is, at a quarter after 6, which is the time, now it's 6:30 here, at a quarter after 6, I realized I'd left everything I collected back at my place. Fortunately, La Vida is a very tiny town. So I ran over there, got what I collected, and brought it back. So I'm ready to go. But before I start sharing from what I have, I would like to find out if you guys have anything that you want to share from the last week.
I just realized I do have my book here. Yes?
Nothing. Looks pretty quiet. All right, then. Let me log in. I was logged in to the forum on Cheryl's computer, but now I'm not using that computer. So let me log into the forum, because everything I have to share is from you guys this week. By the way, I'm not caught up on my reading, and that's primarily because I'm leading a retreat. And so it keeps me pretty busy. But before I got to the retreat, I was caught up. So let me share my screen. All right, there we go. So let me look at my list of stuff that I have to share. And it looks like the first one is Tony, day 165. So let's go find Tony right here. Day 165. So there you go. Now you guys can kind of read along with me. And if you have anything to share right now, I'm not really looking at you. Of course, if I look up on the TV, I can see some of you. But when I'm looking at my screen, I don't see you guys. So if you have anything to share, as always, just feel free to interrupt me and speak up. If you guys have anything to share, let me know. So we're going to start by looking at quotes 553, 554, 555, and 556. And as I said that, I realized I don't want to read the quotes. I realized I just want to read what Tony wrote. So let's start with 553 on Tony's screen. The imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self, because this is where attention is being placed most of the time. Consistent, repetitive and devotional practice of awareness of consciousness itself will eventually bring continuous awareness of consciousness without effort to the I am presence. It appears difficult to be in consistent devotional practice of placing attention in the I am presence because of the habit of looking outward for identification has been so deeply ingrained as the only available consciousness. Feed your desire to know the truth of what you are by remembering and practicing placing attention with the I am presence over and over again. This remembering and practicing with devotion develops new habits of consciousness evolution. And that is exactly what we're talking about at the retreat this week. We're talking about one thing, it seems like, constantly. But this is what's going to cause it to deepen and hopefully help us focus on that I am presence over and over and over again until we develop that new habit. But continuing on with Tony's, the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self through belief in thoughts of division and separateness. Focusing attention on I, me, and mine is focusing on division, because then he, him, and his appear as an other, something different and separate from the whole. This limited view of self-consciousness maintains the sense of individuality. There must be a willingness and desire to expand this limiting view of consciousness through surrender of ideas and concepts of an I. Look at thoughts such as, how will this situation, event, or relationship affect me? Question, who is the me seen in consciousness? This is the opportunity to move attention from self-consciousness to consciousness aware of consciousness. This is how you know that you are not the me that can be affected. This is how you become aware of your expansion into consciousness. So one thing that I liked about this, again, the first quote, you know, she emphasized that we need to develop the habit of focusing on the I am presence. And then here, she set what I call a trigger in the mind. A trigger in the mind, well, in fact, if we're talking about Inception coming up on this Sunday night, it's kind of like the kick in Inception. The trigger in the mind is when you say, whenever I think this, that's going to remind me to look for the I am presence. And the trigger that she has set in the mind is, how will this situation affect me? Or how will this event affect me? Or how will this relationship affect me? And if when you all write things like this, if you then take a piece like this and maybe put it on a separate piece of paper or print it out and then cut out this part and carry it with you throughout the day and read it over and over and over again, you will create a little neuro pathway in your brain with that trigger. It's kind of like creating your kick. So what will happen is, you know, something will happen maybe at work for Tony. You know, maybe somebody is leaving, let's say, and Tony's first thought is, oh my gosh, how is this going to affect me? Then she gets the kick, she gets the trigger, and that reminds her to look and see, you know, who is this me? And return her attention to I am presence. So it's really helpful to have a trigger or a kick. Which is what came out of this. I'm going to go ahead and continue reading with quote 555. What is non-self? There appears to be no knowledge of what self is. The imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self by believing its own ideas of what self is. If self were to let go of all ideas and descriptions, it would lose its sense of a false identity. So yeah, what I liked about, well, let me read the next line first. Do not pretend to know something you do not know. Relish in the not knowing. Here, mystery is the guide in the expansion of knowing. So one of the things that I think is sometimes difficult for us spiritual students is to realize that one of the things we have to let go of are our ideas of God or our ideas of self or ideas of consciousness or awareness or ideas of enlightenment. And in fact, in NTI, I believe it's in NTI Luke, it says something like, what do you expect of me? Where do you think I'm taking you to? This is Holy Spirit speaking. What do you expect of me? Where do you think I am taking you to? And then it asks us, after we answer those questions, here's what I expect of the Holy Spirit, and here's where I think the Holy Spirit is leading me. It asks us to throw all of those ideas away. Because if we hold on to those ideas of what we expect of the Holy Spirit, we could even say what the Holy Spirit is, where we think the Holy Spirit is leading us. We're clinging to concepts. And so the clinging to concepts actually keeps us in the conceptual world and in the conceptual personality. So it's much better, although it takes a while before before the human accepts this, it is much better to not know than to think you know. So I love this relish in the not knowing. Here, mystery is the guide in the expansion of knowing. And that quote 556, the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self by remaining self-conscious. To become aware of your true nature, you must first transcend the limiting view of consciousness of form in the outer to consciousness of consciousness within. The illumination of consciousness, being aware of consciousness, expands consciousness to eventually find its way back to the source. I'm kind of giggling inside because I'm guessing a high school English teacher wouldn't like this sentence. Too much consciousness in your sentence, Tony. No, I don't think it's true, but a lot of these spiritual sentences are just like that, right? We have a teacher here. Yeah, you'd never fly in school. Oh, she's not an English teacher. The illumination of consciousness, being aware of consciousness, expands consciousness to eventually find its way back to the source. Be here in present moment awareness. Allow awareness to move beyond form to awareness of awareness. Allow awareness to move beyond form to awareness of awareness. Live in this expanded state of consciousness until evolution of the next expansion. That's gorgeous. So thank you, Tony. Really good. Does anybody have anything they want to share before I move on to the next thing? And if so, just speak up because I can't see hands or anything.
What was it you said about evolution of consciousness that she wrote?
Yeah, she says, allow awareness to move beyond form to awareness of awareness. Live in this expanded state of consciousness until evolution of the next expansion. Yeah, good, good. All right, then let me peek and see what I had next. It looks like Teresa quotes 557 to 560. So let's go find Teresa. It's kind of funny. You guys could see I have two computers in front of me and a TV all showing me the same thing. Here's Teresa, right underneath Tony. That was easy. I did say 557, right? So here it is. Okay, so Teresa wrote, inner wisdom, is it really necessary to use such vicious language when describing the ego? Poison, hostile. Does this not give it an importance which helps it survive? And this is how inner wisdom answered her. You are always caught between two seemingly polarities. The true self is always and forever present and cannot be destroyed. And the ego needs to be eradicated in order to experience the self. You think if the true self is what you are, then all you need to do is claim that and allow that energy to live you. You have no need to have any dealings with the ego whatsoever. Unfortunately, just because you decide to ignore the ego does not mean that it is no longer alive in you. This is another of its cunning strategies. I am just a harmless self-made thought pattern that has no power. It has indeed no power, except the power you give it. But all your life you have been listening to it in a very unconscious way. Those unconscious patterns are influencing your thoughts and hence how you see yourself and the whole world. Resting as the self in meditation, and very frequently during the day, fills you with the grace to see more and more of the ego's strategies. How can you recognize these? They are multitudinousness. I don't know, that's a big word, but I get it means many, 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 right? The ways are multitudinousness. And with willingness and surrender, you will see more and more. Be aware of needing to feel you are someone of worth by the world's standards, of feeling less than, judging others, having opinions because you think you know, worrying or thinking something in the future is going to save you, and the big trump card that the ego always plays with you. This path is so difficult that it will simply end in frustration and utter despair. So go out into the world and grab all you can before time runs out. Keep asking, is this true? When these temptations arise, allow me to answer. A block of ice the size of a mountain will melt in the warmth of the sun. So too will the ego be powerless in the warmth of my love. Shelter there, rest, and trust. And, you know, I love this because actually in this one little paragraph, several of the ego's preservation strategies are shared. And the one that really caught my attention first when I was reading was the first one mentioned. I am just a harmless, self-made thought pattern that has no power. And if you guys saw a revolver on the rooftop golfing scene, when Avi was explaining to Jake Green what the ego was, you know, right then the ego was really telling him something very, very similar. You know, I don't even exist. You know, I'm nothing, you know. But the reason for saying I don't even exist, I'm nothing, was so Jake Green would not listen to Avi when Avi was teaching about the ego and how to transcend the ego. So it's interesting that one of the ego's tricks, one of the way the ego continues within us is by telling us it's nothing. And ultimately that's true. But in the beginning, we have to recognize it for what it is and remove our attention from it. We can't just accept, oh, it's nothing, it's harmless, because then it continues to thrive. Any comments on this? If so, again, just speak up. All right, so we're going to go to Manuela, number 551. There's 551. Let me have a drink first. Okay, so she put the quote here, so I'll go ahead and read the quote. As long as we do not free ourselves from the state of inattention in which the unified state of self that exists as pure consciousness is subverted through the ego, the state of love that is the fullness of the real, free of all differentiation, will not be experienced in the heart. So here's what she shares. What I found awareness watching awareness did for me was that it allowed me to reduce who am I down to two main feeling experiences. One was the feeling of I am a person, a feeling that I knew all my life. It has thoughts, a body mind, and observes with attention and thinks it has self-will, which she calls the ego. The other was the feeling experience that I am. I exist. I am aware. With this reduction, awareness watching awareness allowed for the false one to fall away. Without awareness watching awareness meditation, we stay stuck in the state of inattention. That is, attention goes out in the world and gets stuck out there, totally distracted. The ego undermines the power and authority of pure consciousness, the unified state of self. That kind of reminded me of a line in the Course that said something about the ego usurps the power of God. right? The ego undermines the power and authority of pure consciousness, the unified state of self. Awareness, watching awareness meditation, trains attention not to make any movement. Pure consciousness is then seen as who I am, and then claimed through grace as the ego falls away. Finally, we see which was false as the false falls away. Now we can see what has remained, pure consciousness, the unified state of self. Pure consciousness is God will, which is always flowing with life as perfection. From the ego point of view, it is total surrender. From the unified state of self, it's just the what is. It is the state of love that is the fullness of the real, free of all differentiation, which is the ego way of experiencing or knowing. It is experienced in the heart as a constant within consciousness. It leads and takes the phenomenal self or the conscious self all the way to the final doorway, to beyond consciousness, to absolute reality. What would stop us from going with the flow of God, going with the passage through consciousness? The thought and belief of ego self will. Ego thinking is stagnation. It delays the passage through consciousness to the absolute. Love of ego way of being actually only delays until grace takes the initiative and we look for another way of being. This passage through consciousness is God will, and it is love calling love home, the divine passage, the inner spark growing into an intense desire for truth, the purpose of consciousness, the evolution of human beings, etc. No body will be left behind. The journey beyond ego is inevitable. It can happen as a sudden act of grace or through reaching the limit of being as ego suffering experience. Either way, grace places attention onto the tiny inner flame of the divine that can only grow with attention. What turned me inwards to search for the truth was being fed up with being depressed, with feeling like I don't fit into this world, together with an unexplainable experience of light as an act of grace or revelation. Eventually, everybody starts to turn inwards through divine timing. The ego conceals pure consciousness. It is the divine plan for consciousness to experience and know pure consciousness, and through it, experience and know the divine. So I don't know if I have anything to add to that. I just thought, in fact, you can see my comment where I said, excellent teaching. I felt that that was a teaching, and I felt that it should be shared as a teaching rather than just left in the journal.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead, Jay.
It was really beautiful what it talked about surrender from the perspective of the conscious mind. Of course, in miracles, not one time can we find the word surrender in the entire book. And I never did quite fully understand why. Do you have any thoughts on that related, just given that there was a big theme of surrender in the mention of this Manuela's contemplation? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I agree with you that the word surrender does not show up in A Course in Miracles once. But I think that if we, look at A Course in Miracles, we see that A Course in Miracles is most definitely teaching surrender. A Course in Miracles is all about letting go of the ego voice and listening to the Holy Spirit, and that is surrender. Why that word was never mentioned, I don't know. I mean, I could guess, you know, maybe Helen didn't like that word, right? And so Jesus avoided it with her, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, that makes sense. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would be my best guess, but I don't know it for a fact. But there's no doubt that the course is all about surrender. And I have heard, you know, once at least, one person get kind of on a high horse and say surrender is not a part of the course, you know, doesn't mention it even once. And I think that's just a blind perspective. Yeah, I think it's all about surrender. Thanks for the question.
I love that phrase, love calling, love home.
Yeah, and Lynn here is saying that she loves the phrase, love calling, love home. And when I received the message that guided me to read the New Testament and let the Holy Spirit interpret it to me. There was a line in it that's very similar. It was telling me that if I listen, you know, without judgment, that I'm, you know, well, basically, I can't remember the exact words, but the gist of it was love cannot say no to love. So if I am listening without judgment to the Holy Spirit, I'm being love, and love cannot say no to me, and it will fill me up with its grace. So love calling love home, and love cannot say no to a call for love. Beautiful, beautiful sentences.
And you had a saying also about spirit calling.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're thinking of what love is, spirit giving to spirit. Gosh, I can't remember this stuff. My mind is just dying. Spirit giving to spirit whatever spirit requests, or something very similar to that. I don't think that was it.
It's similar.
Very similar. Yeah.
And I know I have it typed on my computer.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how these things that I just used to know like this, I mean, everything is just falling away. I can't recall anything anymore, which is fine. It's just interesting. But one thing that I really liked about Manuela's teaching that I wanted to emphasize was she talked about how in awareness, watching awareness, it really brought it down to two, she called them feelings, and Ramana Maharshi calls them feelings too. Two feelings. I am the person was one feeling, and then the other one was I am, or she could call it I exist, or she could call it I am aware. And that, to me, that's exactly what happens in awareness, watching awareness meditation. You get there. You know, when you really contemplate and get in there and meditate, there's two things. There's this feeling I'm a person, and there's this feeling I am, or I'm aware, or I exist. And then when you have the two right there in front of you, which really one isn't in front of you because one is you, but when you have the two right there in your attention, that's when you ask, which one am I? Which one is real? Which one is true? And right there, when they're both right there in front of you without any distraction, it's easy to see which one is true, which one is you, which one is real. So I just love the way she captured that, and just wanted to share that. Any other comments on Manuela's before I move on to the next thing I collected? All right, so, we could stay in Manuela, so I don't have to go searching for anyone else quite yet. 5:52, but I said the second paragraph, so let's see what the second paragraph says. I think it might mean this paragraph. Let's read it and see if I think that's it. The practice given here in this quote is to separate ourselves from the illusory world of the divided mind. This is the practice of awareness, watching awareness. Yeah, this is the paragraph I wanted to read. My divided mind told me that in practicing awareness, watching awareness, I was wasting my life, that I wasn't living at all, that if I died a physical body death, that I would not have experienced life because I was spending so much time in awareness, watching awareness, meditation. Instead of what? Instead of being distracted, being tormented, getting involved in worldly drama, instead of making what I want to happen and getting upset if it didn't happen, I found that this isolation of awareness, watching awareness, meditation was the giving away the all to get the all. We talked about that a little bit today also. I found that this isolation of awareness, watching awareness, meditation was the giving away the all to get the all. When the ego falls away, you come back to, you reconnect to the world, but with a different vision. This vision is pure consciousness. Don't listen to the ego mind voice. It divides and compares you to everybody else. Pure consciousness's vision is the unified state of self-consciousness. Your body eyes still see the same world, but it's perceived differently. You perceive unity consciousness just by seeing your own consciousness. In other words, the conscious phenomenal self holds everybody's unique personalities, but the same divine center and true self bordering the rim of consciousness is the same consciousness support in everything. That is the one consciousness. So again, one reason I wanted to read that, we're in step three, which is all about how does the ego perpetuate itself. And one way the ego perpetuates itself is telling us you're wasting your life in this awareness, watching awareness, meditation, and possibly even other spiritual practices as well. You're just wasting your life. And so I think it's a great witness that she shares that an awakening occurred for her by not listening to that. And it's probably helpful to all of us, because I'm sure we've all heard that. You're wasting your life. You're wasting your time. You've got something better to do, right? How the ego perpetuates itself. Any comments?
I think a zillion ways the ego perpetuates itself, but one insight I had was that the more I'm seeing mind and like this letting go freedom from the judge retreat I went to, the more I realize it's not me and don't listen to it, the less effect all ego tricks have, because they're all from that same voice. So I think even though I'm having some resistance with meditation right now, I think meditation helps with that. The practices we did at this retreat help. So it's almost like awareness watching awareness is like an advanced central practice that weakens like all of them, is my thought. I don't know if you think that's valid or not, but
I think it's very valid. Yeah. Yeah, I think that the more time you spend looking at yourself, your true self, the more you realize you're not the false self, and therefore the less merit you're going to give it. Right? It weakens it, as you said. Yeah, thank you. By the way, when I look like I'm looking up at God or something, looking at the ceiling, what I'm really looking at is the TV, because that's where I see you. Yeah. All right, so I think Shauna was up next. Shauna, number 552. It's nice that they're all right here next to each other. That makes it easy on me. It's pure coincidence, but it makes it easy on me. Right here. And she wrote the purpose right at the top here. The purpose is to see how the imposter self perpetuates itself and how I can overcome it. That's the purpose she wrote for day 164. And then she was contemplating quote 552. The masters are teaching that the self can't be directly experienced until the divided mind no longer exists. This feels like truth in my heart. I have experienced glimpses when the veil became opaque, is that the right word? Opaque at times. The self is unity consciousness, which cannot be divided. I have experienced a sense of unity while in meditation and at times in nature. I can't see division when in unity. Only the imposter self, which is merely believing the thoughts of division, can appear to block awareness of unity. It seems to block awareness of truth in me by my choice to identify with the false ideas I have cast my attention on. Boy, there's a lot of responsibility in that sentence. You know, A Course in Miracles talks about responsibility for sight. It seems to block awareness of truth in me by my choice to identify with the false ideas I have cast my attention on. Do you hear all that responsibility? Which is also my choice, more responsibility. The thoughts appear to offer ideas that tempt me in unique ways. I have noticed, I love this part, I have noticed how an idea that one person easily dismisses is one I have a reaction to, and it's harder for me to dismiss. And we can all say that, you know, we kind of have our little pet, I don't know what to call them, pet false ideas that we're attracted to, you know, pet judgments and all of that. So I have noticed how an idea that one person easily dismisses is one I have a reaction to, and it is harder for me to dismiss. What causes this? I have learned that by watching what I feel emotional reactions to, that these triggers are deeply held beliefs. Here comes the responsibility again, that I have reinforced for years. They always lead me back to a judgment of others or myself. Judgment of any type always contracts me into separation. It is my desire to catch the thought before it becomes an emotion by applying the practices I have been taught. Once I engage the emotion, it becomes harder to disengage attention from thought. And I learned that exact same thing. I learned the sooner I let go, the better. Like if a thought came in, you know, he's a jerk, that's the best place to let go. Because if I let that story continue and it becomes this feeling, you know, then it was much harder to let go of. It still can be let go of, don't get me wrong, and that's what rest, accept, and trust is all about. But it's like it has roots now. It kind of digs into me and it has roots. So it's harder to let go of. So the best thing to do is to notice a thought as an ego thought. And simply because it is ego, I choose to let it go. Again, that's responsibility. So here's what she wrote for a practice. I must thoroughly investigate my own self so that this identification with thought ceases. I use little s self-inquiry, capital S self-inquiry, meditation, contemplation, awareness, aware of awareness, mantra, study, and just being. Through these practices, I become familiar with how the ego voice entices me to listen. Then I can actively turn attention around back to the self. I know this is truth because I feel a deep peace and quiet, no matter what appears to be happening out there. In devotion and surrender, I continue until grace takes the next step. I wait in faith. Yeah, it's beautiful. And again, taking responsibility. I mean, you have to take responsibility. And until you've taken responsibility, you're really still the ego's puppet. Right. So that was a beautiful demonstration. Thank you very much. And I think, believe it or not, that's all that I have collected for the week. And again, that part of that is because I'm sure that I would have more, but I am behind. I'm behind in reading the form again. And that's because I'm at a retreat. And then when I'm not at the retreat, I have work, you know, other work to do. So I just haven't been able to keep up. And I apologize to you, but I'm going to do what I always do when this happens. I'm not going to try and keep up now that we've had a meeting, right? Tomorrow, I'll just start with tomorrow. And by the way, I want to say that this is true for you guys too. If you fall behind and if you want to catch up, that's fine. But I really, just like I don't put that pressure on myself, you don't have to put that pressure on yourself if it feels like pressure. If you like go on vacation with the family or you have a few days that are just busier than usual and you're not able to keep up, feel free when you come back just to start wherever we are if you want to. If you want to catch up, do that. You know, really, whatever you want to do is fine with me. But I think I'm beyond the point in life, in mind, where I think pressure is necessary. You know, used to, I thought pressure was necessary, and now I don't. I think it's great just to live life as if you're sitting in a lawn chair on the beach. So, no pressure. Does anyone else have anything to share? Because if not, we might just end early tonight. I actually have a meeting at a quarter till, so it wouldn't hurt. It'd give me time to drive home and get ready for my meeting. Yes, Tony, go ahead.
What I have to say won't make you late for your meeting, but I just wanted to recognize that in the beginning, in Gentle Healing 1, there was definitely a... I think an expectation, at least that I felt like I was seeing, that if you don't come to the meeting, don't share if you haven't done your homework. And yes. That was extremely motivational for me. And so I just always felt like, yes, it might be something that's an expectation I want to live up to, but it also felt like that's what I want to do. And so now I'm in the phase of this program where, you know, I do miss some days and I never honestly feel like I want to go back to where I was at. I want to be right here and present with what's in front of me, what I'm looking at. And so, and I don't feel pressure at all anymore. And I just don't experience that. And I just appreciate you saying it out loud. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you. And of course, the reason for the rules were different in the beginning than now. First of all, you guys are third-year students. but in the beginning, if we didn't have that rule, what would happen? And I don't know if you guys remember, we used to have like 100 people in the room when we first started. Do you remember that? And so what would happen is people would have shown up who didn't do any of the homework, who didn't even know what we were doing, and they'd hear like Tony make a comment, and then they'd want to make a comment. And then somebody else would want to make a comment. And pretty soon the conversation would just go off with people just wanting to talk, hear themselves talk. So we had to have that rule in order to stay focused. But now we have a lot fewer people, and as far as I know, everybody here is dedicated. You're the ones who did, out of 100 people, you are the last 20 to 25. You're the ones who didn't fall away. And so I don't need to be concerned. And again, if you miss a few days or a week or whatever, and it's easier just to join us where we're at, that's what I want you to do. I already know that you're dedicated. You've shown that. So thank you.
And I think that first year helped establish the practice.
Yeah, and she says that, Lynn says, and the first year helped establish the practice, right? Get us in the habit of doing something every day. Jay, did I see your hand?
Yeah, I was going to offer to lead a fellowship for the next 10 minutes if you wanted to go. I could continue discussion if you wanted to get out of there. That's all I was going to say.
Oh, thanks. Well, I did set the meeting for a quarter till because I knew that I would have to jump in the car and drive home. And to be honest, the meeting, I'll tell you about the meeting. The meeting is with Jasmine, but it's an actual awakening together meeting. Because one of the things
really?
That we are considering doing is starting a different version of MPP. You know, right now we have a classroom version, but there are some people that work and they just can't make our times. So we're considering an online version of MPP that doesn't meet in class, that just goes through the forum. And the reason I'm meeting with my daughter is because she took 3 semesters during the summer of online classes. And they were very engaging, right? And, you know, she worked in teams. And so what I want to do is learn from her what she has to teach me and bring some of those ideas into this new MPP process. So although it is my daughter, it is an official Awakening Together meeting, and she knows that. But I did set it for, I gave myself 15 minutes to close the computer, say goodbye to these guys, and run out. And as you know, I only live 5 minutes away, so we're good if there's something else to say. But if there's nothing else to say, we'll just end early. So that's up to y'all. But I can stay till the half hour. So does anyone else have anything to share? All right, then. We'll give Don 8 minutes off today by ending early. So thank you, guys. It was wonderful being with you. I wish you were all here with us on the retreat.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's a fabulous retreat. It's really, really good. So I'll see you here for this next Tuesday night. But, of course, tomorrow I'll be back here in the evening time with the next Nisargadatta teaching. And I'm releasing the mic.